Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 129, being recorded on the 25th of May, 2016, with special guest Manoj Parvathaneni. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guest, Manoj. So before we give the mic over to Manoj, so he can give us an update on an interesting topic that we haven't talked about much before on this podcast, Kale, good to have you back on the show.
How are things with you? This person showing up with us?
I know. He just kind of drops in now and then, you know?
Sorry, guys. I was traveling last week. And
it's only fun because we can give you a hard time, Kale.
Yeah.
And you notice every time, you know, Kale's missing, our listenership seems to
drop off.
I was going to say jump, but okay.
There you go. Yeah.
Anyways, I mean, Evan, I think you put a bunch of updates in the show notes, so thank you for that. Anyone in particular you want to start off with over there?
Yeah, so there's actually kind of one I'll just throw out for the group to know. Again, don't have a lot of context on this one, still learning, but we've now added for the cognitive services features, right? There's now a speaker recognition API, so you can basically, you know, some of the, like, I think there was an article in USA Today, MSN, something recently talking about some of the big banks now are authenticating you based on your voice print, right? So this is kind of on that same line. Here, you've got your voice; it's very unique to you. And from these APIs, it'll then say who this person is. Again, how this actually lands in terms of kind of the initial seeding, don't know, but I think it's really neat to see us, again, layering services on top of services. The other thing that again, it strikes really close to my heart as kind of an ex-networking person, is we used to, in Azure, have this concept of affinity groups, right, which is we wanted to make sure that you got your resources deployed as physically close as possible.
Right.
Well, we've improved the network sufficiently in Azure now over the last few years that now affinity groups kind of really aren't necessary. There are some really, really fringe scenarios where you might need them, so, you know, they're there, but they're deprecated. But these days, because there's a whole bunch of downsides with pinning these resources close to each other physically, because then you don't have the ability to get some of the new larger VM SKUs, some of the new features that are only in certain clusters, right? You lose that ability. But it took us improving our network to allow us to get rid of this feature, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a really good thing across the board, but it really, to me, it tells something about where we've come from, right? Where we used to kind of really have to optimize where we put these things. And now, you know what, they're in the data center. It's fast enough. It's going to work great.
Great. And, to jump into DevOps a little bit, you know, last time we spoke about Jenkins in the last episode, and this week we have an update regarding Bitbucket, which is a fairly popular source control system. But Bitbucket also has something like Jenkins, which is the Bitbucket pipelines. It's kind of like automation system where you get you could do all sorts of cool things, and right now we've enabled them to be able to publish directly into Azure from the pipeline, so you could check in, you know, Azure code into Bitbucket, and then as part of the build process, continuous integration, you can just have it deployed directly into Azure. So I thought that was something nice that they've integrated into Bitbucket.
So question for you guys, because again, I've kind of been out of that world for a while now, and this wasn't a big deal. This is really about the model of when you check in your code, not only does it need to compile, but it should be runnable and moved to production in some fashion, right? This is all about enabling that. Just all the time you check in this little change, because right in production you can see immediately whether it works or fails, right?
Right. You want to deploy it somewhere so that you could run a bunch of unit tests on it, right, to make sure that the build is good. And so typically you as part of your continuous integration process, you drop it into
like
a host
like
Azure.
Like that.
Yeah. And then run a bunch of tests on it, and then you know that that's good, and then you could, you know, I guess promote that into production at some point.
Gotcha. Okay. So basically, this takes some of the complexity out of, hey, I've checked in new code. Let me build this environment, publish my code, run my unit test. This is just kind of always going
it's,
from
it's,
that
just
perspective.
Automa- it's automated, yeah, when you check code.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, neat.
And then about the SharePoint thing. Cale, you want to talk about this, the SharePoint dev
sure,
test farm?
Sure. Yeah, there's a couple things. One is these are both. There's two announcements this week around the dev test labs. So there's we've had that offering. I think we talked about that in recent history on this podcast. But today, I guess I don't know if it was today or this week, they had announced the general availability of the dev test labs offering that's up there. But one of the things that's up there now is we have a nice article up there on SharePoint 2016. So basically, it's a if you go to the kind of the post on this, there's a link over to a TechNet article, which basically walks you through this, and it's a series of ARM templates and scripts and all the guidance to basically spin up a SharePoint instance server dev test farm kind of for testing. So I mean, this is really good because I think we've talked about this in the past too, when we had others on, that SharePoint's kind of an animal when you go to stand it up, because there's quite a few pieces to it, and being able to kind of automate that with our dev test with a dev test farm is kind of interesting, because you could like say, hey, I want to test this thing. I just have this idea for this new plugin or something for SharePoint. You could go fire this up within a short period of time, as opposed to having to spend days or whatnot trying to get these things running.
So this is Cale. So this is actually, I didn't think of when I first read this, but so this is actually taking the capabilities of ARM and templatized stuff, layering in the dev test capabilities that we have now, where we kind of have these, we can build these pristine environments and tear them down easily, combining those two things into this kind of, here's a pre-built normal SharePoint type configuration. Click a button, now you've got it. Deploy your special, your code you're testing, and then tear it down, and you're done. Right.
Yeah, we used to have these templates a long time ago, back in like, I think it was SharePoint 2010 or somewhere back there. They were like the information worker images for like Hyper-V, and you could basically just go hydrate them, and there you had SharePoint. It was like, this kind of feels similar to that. There's a little bit more scripting there, but yeah, in Azure, so you could test it.
And it's all ARM templates, right, I believe?
Yeah.
I think there's some the PowerShell and stuff in there too, but yeah, there's ARM templates, PowerShell, and that kind of thing, and they kind of talk you through what the config kind of looks like.
Nice, very nice. Well, I don't know. Have you guys used MATLAB before? Manoj, have you used MATLAB at school or before?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, a long time ago. I mean, years and years.
I remember using it back in
more years than college. I want to admit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why I was cautiously asking there with Manoj, because Manoj probably never. I don't know if they still use it, but apparently it's still popular. It's I guess it's a math processing system. You create all these simulations and algorithms and things like that, and you typically have to do a lot of number crunching. There's typically a lot of setup required. You need a bunch of VMs, to working together to kind of distributed all the multi-processor interactions and whatnot that are required. And it used to be a pain in the neck to set up. And I guess now they've created a bunch of like ARM templates to spin up these MATLAB clusters really easily. So it should be interesting for the educational crowd. To be able to leverage all the GPU VMs that we have, and be able to do all that processing really quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we can move on to the last kind of update for this week, which is a good segue into what we're going to talk to Manoj about, which is about Azure Backup. And Azure Backup is now generally available in the Azure portal. So what does that, Evan, maybe you can just tee us up as to what that means, and we'll pass it on to Manoj then.
Yeah, no, so really, I mean, we've been really working hard, our engineering teams have, working really hard to move everything to the new portal. right, rather than the classic portal. And, you know, a lot of these services have kind of been the space where some things are surfaced in the old portal, new functionality is showing up, and maybe you can't do everything, you know, if you have classic resources. Right? It's difficult for our customers to manage. So we've really been pushing the engineering teams to work really hard on getting their stuff out of the old classic, out of the classic portal, into the new portal, kind of makes it, and they can still manage the classic resources of the new portal, but then we can turn off and disable the stuff in the old portal so then you're always kind of having this same experience. And backup surfacing fully in the new portal is really a great step forward because, again, it fully allows you to tie in with all your ARM VMs and you know, some new functionality that lights up in this new portal. Manoj can probably, you know, potentially speak to some of that stuff, but it's, you know, it's a big deal when we get a service completely out of the old portal at this point. You know, it's kind of a real, it's a maturity of that service at that point.
And yes.
Go ahead, yeah, Manoj. So,
yeah, with this GA, I mean, what we've done is, as Evan pointed out, that we want to make it easy for the customer, streamline the experiences. So previously, Azure backup and Azure site recovery, you had to create two different walls. With this service going GA in the new portal, now what we have done is we've streamlined the backup and disaster recovery experiences together. So there, you now can create a single vault in the new portal and do all of your scenarios, whether it comes to Azure backup or recovery service, site recovery, which is used for disaster recovery, from one single vault. And all these items kind of show up in different ways. Like for example, Azure backup, you will see them as protected items, whereas Azure site recovery would show up as replicate items. So those are really streamlined, and it makes it easy. You don't have to maintain two different walls. And the idea there is, as the service evolves, we are going to make these integrations closer and closer and make it even better. So that's the first step, to kind of make it live in the new portal, support the existing scenarios, streamline the Azure backup and recovery. So that's went live, as Evan pointed out, in the new portal.
That's great, Manoj. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I actually have a bunch of questions on that, but before we get there, could you please give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure. My name is Manoj Parvathaneni. I'm a senior escalation engineer on the Azure backup and recovery services team. Our team basically works on all of Azure backup as well as on-prem backup solutions that exist today. A little bit about myself. I've been with Microsoft now 13 years, and I've kind of gone between different teams. Pretty much I've supported every product from Windows all the way to Link or Office Communication Server, as it used to be called, ISA. So I've pretty much been on several different teams. The last team I was on was System Center, and I mainly used to do debugging and complex issues related to debug on System Center products. This team, Azure Backup and Recovery Services team, was created a couple of months ago to kind of streamline the experiences, align with where our Azure backup and recovery services going. It was previously different teams. So we merged those teams and aligning it to streamline the support experience as the products show up in Azure, make sure they have the consistent experience, not only configuring and using the product, but also when something breaks, when they call in, they have the same consistent experience there as well. So that's what the team I'm on. So that's basically a little bit about myself and what I do.
Yeah, and I got to say, I remember when I first met Manoj, he was, I guess you were studying for finishing a degree or working on some classes. He would be here late in the evening, you know, working on stuff and getting ready to go to class. And I'm here in the evenings anyways. And I just kept saying, dude, come to the cloud. The cloud's awesome. And here he is. So it is great to see him in this space. You know, he's a great addition to the team in the space. And I thought it'd be awesome to have him on and just kind of, you know, again, he's relatively speaking new to this world. So he's, you know, some of these things he's seeing from his perspective, but he knows backup really well. And again, I just thought it'd be good to kind of share that perspective with our audience.
Thank you for giving us that opportunity, Evan. So Manoj, I have one question just based on what you were explaining earlier. Mm-hmm. What exactly is a vault?
Oh, what is a vault? Okay, yeah. So think about it as a storage account that's owned by the Azure recovery services and backup team, right? Engineering team. So that basically what happens is you today backup your data into Azure. It actually goes and gets stored in that vault. So that's where the data is stored. That's the basically storage location secured and encrypted. And this is where all the backup data that goes, or even for that matter, site recovery, right? When you do Azure, use site recovery to protect your workloads, that's where that data is stored. That's what the vault is.
I see. Okay. And
that's the easier, the straightforward definition. Think of it as a storage account, basically.
And you can have multiple of them if required.
Yeah, you can have multiple of them, correct.
Okay. So what are the typical use cases for putting stuff into a vault? Like you mentioned site recovery as being one of them, correct?
Right.
How,
so that's good.
How do people
that's
use that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So to kind of give you the way to answer this would be to kind of give you in a background of what Azure backup means or what Azure site recovery is. So if I can touch those, right, that will cover
sure.
the use case scenarios. So we have, let's start with Azure backup. So Azure backup, when you talk about Azure backup, there are different levels where you need to protect your data or back up your data, right? So let's start with the fundamental scenario, right? Where you deploy a VM in Azure and you want to make sure that something goes wrong and you want to go back to a working good snapshot of the VM, right? That's like the scenario you would do in an on-prem environment. You would go in and say, hey, let me take a snapshot of this VM. And if you want to do something similar in Azure, there are various ways of doing that. But one of them is IaaS. We call that as IaaS VM backup, right? So you can enable that. You can schedule it. You can take a backup. It will be an app-consistent backup. You configure that, and it will take a backup of the VM. And then anytime you have a problem, you go back and restore the VM. So that's one scenario. When you do the backup of the VM, it gets stored in the recovery vault. So the VM backup is stored there. There are policies that you define, like, hey, what time this backup should run, how long the retention is. Those settings are also stored in the vault. So that's one scenario, right? So if you want to back up your VMs that are running in Azure, so IaaS VM backup is your solution.
Okay.
But let's say you have file servers, files and folders that are on premises. You want to make sure they are available for you as an offline backup. So you want to do an offsite backup. So you don't want to use tape anymore. A lot of people are moving away from that, and they want to use cloud in some ways. So what you could do is you could start off with what we call as Microsoft Azure Backup Agent. So you can install that agent on any server that where you have files and folders that you want to backup. So you install it, you configure it, and then when you start backing up that data is also stored in the recovery services vault. That's another scenario that you'll, so files and folder backup, if you want to do those, then you would use the MAB agent, and that would be another scenario where the recovery services vault will play a role. The last one, you've done IaaS VM backup. What if I'm running an application like a SharePoint or a SQL, whether it's on-prem or whether that application is running inside a VM in Azure, and I want to back up those applications, right? Mm-hmm. So for that, we have two different approaches you can do. If you already have a System Center suite, you have the licensing for that, you can install System Center Data Protection Manager, and then you can start protecting those workloads using DPM. So what DPM does is it will protect the data, copy that over to the DPM server. And now for long-term protection, instead of traditionally you would use a tape backup, what we are telling our customers, hey, leverage cloud. And if you want to use the Azure cloud to store the data, what you will do is enable what we call as online protection. You'll turn that on, and now the data that was backed up locally for short-term purpose on the DPM server will be pushed out to Azure. And again, that will be stored in the recovery services vault that the customer creates. So that's another scenario where that will play a role. We also have DPM System Center DPM requires you to have the licensing already, but if you don't want to do that, you want to still do the same scenarios, we now have an offering called as Microsoft Azure Backup Server. As long as you have a active Azure subscription, you can go ahead and download it for free, and it will be charged based on what you use and what you consume. So that's the another solution you can do today, which will allow you to do the similar things, which is backing up workloads like SharePoint, SQL, Hyper-V. And you could either run it on a VM in Azure, or you can run it on-premises and then do the long-term backup to the vault in Azure. So that's like the another scenario that you would use this. So those are mainly like three scenarios that we have and live today, and that's how you use the vault from an Azure backup perspective.
So you and I don't tend to play in the money world, right? But do you know kind of order of magnitude? You know, storage is cheap in Azure. Mm-hmm. I mean, dirt cheap. But there's a little bit of extra cost for doing backups. But so I assume so. It, or is there? Is it? Or are you just straight paying for the storage that you consume?
I don't know the exact cost, but I can.
We'll follow up for the show notes then, because you know, let's definitely get up. But I think if memory serves me right, and I'm drawing a blank on the exact number, it is low enough that really, given all the options we've given people, there's no excuse not to back these things up.
Correct. I mean, it's very minimal. Even if there is the cost, it's only the storage cost. From what you're right, I believe it's the storage cost. We don't really charge you for egress traffic or anything like that when you are copying the data over to the vault or downloading data from the vault, from what I understand.
Okay.
Manoj, how does the restore work when you're doing the files and folders? You said you do it through this agent, this backup agent. So do they get like a first-class experience in terms of restoring folders?
So that's a good question. So do they, if I'm understanding your question, you're saying, do they have the ability to, so let's say they backed up the files and folders from a machine on premises, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say they did that and backed it up to Azure. That machine is no longer available. Now they want to go ahead and restore. What would be the user experience? Is that something
Correct.
You can do it from Azure today? The answer is not for the agent. What you'll have to do is you'll have to find another VM or another machine. It could be any machine. It doesn't matter. You install the agent, download what we call the vault key, which is, and then you also have what we, there's a two-level encryption. One is the data is encrypted. We can, and you also have a passphrase. So what you have to do is you have to install the agent on another machine and then use the vault registration key, right? To get to the vault, to get the data. And then once you get the data, you have to decrypt the data. Microsoft can. You have to have the fast phrase. So when you install the original machine, you would have to back up the fast phrase, and you use that. And now you can recover that data just like you would have done from the original machine.
So is that a two-step process, or is that done like on the fly, the whole decryption and everything?
That's all done on the fly. You have to provide the key. It's basically a wizard, right? It will you will choose, hey, I want to restore data for another server, and then you just point it to the right key and the right password so that it can go and do all the stuff, magic behind the scenes for you.
And when I meant the user experience, like, does it show you all the folders out there? You know how in traditional backup systems.
Yes, you can do item level recovery.
Right. Okay, that's excellent. That's perfect. Okay.
Yeah, you can do that. Definitely, you can do that.
Okay, that's great. Yeah.
So the other aspect, right? So that's from a backup perspective, right? So usually you do backup for long term, and traditionally it takes a long time. But what if I want to protect my workloads? So let's say I have a data center running in on premises. I want to make sure that, hey, when that data center, for whatever reason, whether it's because of some natural disasters or some outage, power outage, or anything that's going to be there for a long time, they want to make sure that all their workloads that were running on premises, now they are available, right? So traditionally, some people would set up a secondary data center, then replicate everything there, right? And it was super costly, right, to Now you're maintaining a separate environment only for the purpose of disaster. With Azure Site Recovery, what you can do is you can protect virtual machines running on Hyper-V, virtual machines running on VMware, or physical servers, and you can protect them in Azure. Now, what you're doing today, all you're paying for is the storage cost, because you're replicating the data is stored in our vault. And then when time comes and things go wrong, you can go ahead and say, hey, I want to flip this, and I want to turn on this machine in Azure. All you do is you do a, what we call as a failover process. At that point, we spawn the instances of those machines and then run them as a compute resource in Azure. So that's another scenario where you'll use the vault and store that information there while we're replicating. So that's a really popular way now. Like, people are using Azure Site Recovery, not only for DR scenarios, but also for migration. A lot of customers that I've seen lately have actually used Azure Site Recovery as a migration tool to Azure. And it's pretty easy to set up. It's really, really getting more popularity. It wasn't intended initially as a migration, but that's how people are using it. It's not only used for migrating from physical servers, VMware VMs, Hyper-V, also from other cloud providers. So you can actually do that as well. So that's another scenario that's pretty popular now. Azure Site Recovery is the way to go there. If you want to do migration, you have a lot of VMs, then that's the preferred method. If you have one-off VMs, then I wouldn't recommend going down that route. But if you have lots of physical servers, virtual machines that you want to migrate, then that would be the preferred way of going to Azure.
That's great. Yeah. Now, and I know you said this backup agent on premises is constantly taking up backups, right, based on some schedule. Is there some way to throttle the amount of bandwidth that it uses so it doesn't suck up all your, because you know it could potentially be uploading a lot of data for your when doing
yes.
backups.
Yes. You can definitely configure the network bandwidth usage for it. You can throttle that. That's controlled via the UI. It's easily configurable.
Okay, great.
So that's kind of a high level. That's what we that's what our team does, and those are the solutions available today, right? And both of those solutions are available, both Classic and the ARM portal, or the portal, Azure portal. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say. So, Manoj, you know, to put a little bit of a support spin on it, you know, because you know, you and I sit around and go, God, if we could just figure out a way to get customers not to do X, right? We wouldn't have jobs. You know, is there one or two things that you would kind of say to this audience? Hey, here's something you see people make a mistake on over and over. You know, we're trying to fix documentation, trying to fix the product, but like, watch out for these. Or two things.
So recently, the trends that I've been seeing is it's kind of not. I'll start with the one which is very common. It's not just only with Azure Backup or Azure Site Recovery. Like, people configure network security groups networking configuration which restricts the VM's internet access. Right. So that's actually a problem in ways for us. When it comes to Azure IaaS VM backups, so we're doing IaaS VM backup. We take a snapshot of that VM, and then we use Azure APIs to talk to storage and store that data. If the internet is blocked from within the VM, we won't be able to talk to the storage blobs, right? So as a result, the communication fails. That's one of the scenarios we see very often. And if you look at it and you start investigating, and what we found is it could be because of proxy settings. That's one of the things that customers use proxy within the VM so that they kind of limit what people can do within the VMs. That's one of the causes that we see. The other things that we have seen surface lately is network security groups that people completely block internet access. So that will break it, right? That will break IaaS VM backup. So that's something that comes up, and then same thing, that same scenario, you flip it, and then you go to Azure Site Recovery. What happens is you protect your machines. Let's say you're trying some VM went down, you want to, or you're trying to do a test failover, what we call it, a test failover, where you can test it out and make sure it actually, the machine boots up and it does what you want it to do once you fail over to Azure. So when you do those test failovers, what we do is we take the replicated VM, replicated VHDs, and we spawn a new VM. During that process, we have to, again, talk to Azure Storage to download certain extensions, some, do some massaging, right? And that all goes over internet, right? So if you have blocked HTTP and HTTPS, and you have blocked access to internet, then that will break the deployment as well. So, that's
And the key though here, just to be clear for people, so we, from a given deployment's perspective, the rest of Azure is considered quote unquote internet, right? From a VM's perspective, it's leaving the VM and it's going out into the, you know, the rest of the data center. That's still internet from a security and a protection perspective. That's why your people are running afoul, because they're thinking internet like leaving the data center. Right, but we think when we say internet, we mean not your IPs in essence.
Right, so that's like the that's the top issue, right? We see, and then we do see some used to see a lot of this before. I mean, it's not anymore, but you would fail over. Hey, I can't RDP to the machine. The common thing would be that people in the old portal, you had to create an endpoint. People won't create it because it's not something that happens default. So you would get a call saying, hey, I failed over, but I can't get to it. Or they configured the network incorrectly, and now they can't get to it. So those are like common things we see, quick things that customers can check for when they're doing these kind of scenarios. Like when they're restricting, make sure they don't block, you know, Azure IP ranges. That would break IaaS VM backup. It would break deployment of VMs during failover process. The other thing that I see in the Azure Site Recovery space, which could be avoided with some planning. So there is what I call this scenario is you have a VM you're trying to protect. That VM has high churn. When I say high churn, I mean it's the VHD files or the data on that VM changes very frequently because it's either a SQL database or a file server scenario, whatever the scenario might be. It's a high churn, and then you have a low bandwidth. So you have to kind of do a proper capacity planning. There is a capacity planner for Azure Site Recovery. I recommend that when you are trying to protect the VMs, make sure you think about those things. A, hey, what's the churn on these VMs? How much churn happens? What time of the day the churn happens? What kind of bandwidth is available to me at any given point of the day, right? Because you have to profile the application. Yes, you can protect it, but then if your bandwidth is not, the network bandwidth or throughput is not high enough for replicating those VMs, then what you will see is you'll go in this constant resync cycle where, hey, we'll sync the VM, and then it will, because of the bandwidth not being there and the high churn in the environment, it's not able to keep up. And then you'll fall behind your recovery point objectives or recovery time objectives that you have. And it's super critical that you spend that extra time and you're setting up the protection to think about these things, high churn, the network bandwidth, what time of the day the churn happens, is the bandwidth sufficient during that time of the day? Those things are super important and has to be done during the planning. I've seen customers sometimes struggle with this and they don't plan for it, and then they run into a bunch of issues where they spend endless hours in troubleshooting. So that's something you could do and avoid. So that would be another tip that I would, there's a good capacity planner, go through that, and that would be our recommendation. We're doing some improvements in that area to kind of make it more resilient and whatnot, but still, if the bandwidth is not there, it's a high churn, we can only do so much to compress and send data. So that's something to look at as well in that space.
Awesome. Great. Yeah, no, thanks for the tips.
Nice tip.
I'm sure that'll help somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask about the retention policies that we use in Azure Backup. Evan and Cale, I don't know if memory serves me right. I believe that if you keep the data for a long period of time, it costs less than if you're going to be accessing the data more often, right? Isn't there some sort of thing like that?
Well, you're talking about the new cool storage.
Yeah.
But I don't think Azure Backup takes advantage of that yet, Manoj, does it?
No, we don't support that yet, no.
Okay. That's what I'm thinking about. Okay, yeah. I knew we talked about that recently. Okay.
No, yeah. That was something that customers have asked when that was announced. What was that, a couple of months ago that we announced that mm-hmm. feature?
We don't
support cool storage yet.
So right now you can specify the retention period, and that could be, I think, 99 years or something like that, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's a very high number. Yeah, I think it's 99 years.
Okay.
If you manage to save data for 99 years and it's still relevant, I'm impressed.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I'm seeing, and we kind of discouraging people from doing, is installing the Microsoft Azure Backup agent on an IaaS VM or a VM running in Azure, right? We don't recommend doing that. That has a severe impact on backup performance. The reason being, if you're deploying it on a VM, which is using, it's a standard VM, it uses standard storage, there are storage limits from Azure perspective. Like per disk, you have 500 IOPS, and then at a storage level, you have 20,000 IOPS. And if you have a really busy server and you deploy Microsoft Azure Backup Agent, it's going to eat up some of your IOPS while doing the backup. So it's not a good idea. It's going to be really slow. So what we recommend there is not to use MAB, the Microsoft Azure Backup Agent, for file and folder. Instead, rely on IaaS VM backup. And in future, we'll enable a file level recovery using the IaaS VM backup. So that's something that's in the roadmap. And that's another tip. I'm seeing that more and more lately, is people are trying to do that and it doesn't work. Of course, if you want to make that work, you can switch to premium storage and you'll be able to get through it. But we don't recommend doing that. That's our long-term strategy, is to recommend customers use IaaS VM backups. And we'll enable some scenarios there, which will then allow you to do restore portions of the VM. And that's something will come down the road.
Thanks for the tips, Manoj.
And no problem. Does this also supported under Linux as well?
Yes, we support backup of Linux and Windows VMs. Correct.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's great. Great. Any more questions from Manoj, guys?
No, this is great, Manoj. Thanks for coming on and sharing kind of some of your experience and your perspective here.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, okay. Much appreciated, Manoj.
And Cale, thanks for putting all those links in the show notes as well.
No worries.
Yeah. Take care, guys.
Bye. Okay.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.